Welcome to Zichu Daf Siman, member by Avram Goldar, and today we're Zechus Bam Metzia, Daf Zayin, the first parak, Shnayim Ochasin. So the three topics we're going to focus on. Number one, Rav Tal Chalifa of Eretz Yisrael taught a brisa. Shnayim Adukim Batalis. If two litigants are clutching a cloak, each claiming ownership, Zen Noto Ad Makum Shiyadu Magas, Zen Noto Ad Makum Shiyadu Magas. This one takes as far as his hand reaches, as does the other. Vashar Chokim Beshava, and the rest of the cloak is divided evenly. Vyavo indicated that they must swear. Our Mishnah, which stated only that the cloak is divided evenly, is explained by Rav Papa, the Tfise Ber Karkashta, where they are holding the fringes of the cloak, but no significant portion of the cloak itself. Rav Mishar Shia inferred from this price that if someone grasps 3x3 finger breadths of a sudra, a kerchief typically used for a chalifin, the transaction is affected, although the rest is still in its owner's hand, to command the pasuk dummy, because the portion in his hand is considered like it's cut off from the rest of the kerchief. Point number two is taught in a brisa, shnayim adukim bashtar. If two people, a creditor and a debtor, are clutching a document of debt, and the creditor says it's his, and he lost it and subsequently found it, and the debtor says that although the document is authentic, he already paid the debt and was given the shtar and later lost it, Rebbe says yiskayim shtar b'chosmav, the document must be certified through its signatures as being authentic. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says yochaloku, they should divide the debt equally. Rebbe does not mean that an authenticated shtar would be collected in full, because this would contradict our Mishnah where the disputed cloak is divided. Rav Nachman explains that all agree that the debt of a certified shtar is divided equally. The Malchokas concerns an uncertified document. Rebbe holds Moda B'shtar Shksav Otsarich L'Kaimo. Even where a debtor admits he wrote a document but claims he repaid it, the creditor must still certify it to collect. Since the debtor is the one who validated the document, he can also claim it has been paid. Therefore, if the creditor certifies it himself, they'll divide the debt amount. If not, he collects nothing. Rav Shimon Gamliel holds that if a debtor admits the shtar is authentic, Ein Tzarich L'Kaimo, so the debt here is divided without authentication. And point number three, the brisa continued, Nafal Yad Dayan. If the shtar fell into a judge's hand, the Tana Kama says, Lo Yotzio Olamis, the litigants can never retrieve it. Rav Yossi says, Haru B'cheskaso, it remains in its status as a valid shtar. Rav explains this means that someone found the shtar which was certified with a henpeck by a judge. The brisa teaches that not only where the shtar was not certified, where the loan may never have been issued, but even where it was certified and the loan was made, it is still not returned to the lender, the chayshidim l'pirion, because we are concerned about possible payment by the borrower. Rav Yossi says the shtar is returned to the lender and we're not concerned it was paid. The Gemara asks that this contradicts a different opinion of Rabbi Yossi's. A brisa teaches that if a ksuba is found and the husband claims it's paid, it's not given to either party. Rabbi Yossi says that if she's still married and the time of payment has not arrived, the ksuba is returned to the wife. If she has been divorced or widowed, it's not given to either party because he is concerned about payment. Three answers are given, two of which reverse the opinions of the first brisa. So once again, the three points are number one, Rav Tal Chalifa of Eretz Yisrael taught a brisa. Shnayim Adukim Batalist. If two litigants are clutching a cloak, each claiming ownership, Zed Noto Ad Makum Shiyadu Magas, but Zed Noto Ad Makum Shiyadu Magas. This one takes as far as his hand reaches, as does the other, Bashar Chokim Beshava, and the rest of the cloak is divided evenly. V'yavo indicated that they must swear. Our Mishnah, which stated only that the cloak is divided evenly, is explained by Rav Papa, the Tfise Ber Karkashta, where they are holding the fringes of the cloak, but no significant portion of the cloak itself. Rav Mishar Shia inferred from this brisa that if someone grasps 3x3 finger breadths of a sudra, a kerchief typically used for a chalifin, the transaction is affected, although the rest is still in its owner's hand, to command the pasuk dummy, because the portion in his hand is considered like it's cut off from the rest of the kerchief. Point number two is taught in a brisa, shnayim adukim bashtar. If two people, a creditor and a debtor, are clutching a document of debt, and the creditor says it's his, and he lost it and subsequently found it, and the debtor says that although the document is authentic, he already paid the debt and was given the shtar and later lost it, Rebbe says yiskayim shtar b'chosmav, the document must be certified through its signatures as being authentic. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says yochaloku, they should divide the debt equally. Rebbe does not mean that an authenticated shtar would be collected in full, because this would contradict our Mishnah where the disputed cloak is divided. Rav Nachman explains that all agree that the debt of a certified shtar is divided equally. The Malchokas concerns an uncertified document. Rebbe holds Moda B'shtar Shksav Otsarich L'Kaimo. Even where a debtor admits he wrote a document but claims he repaid it, the creditor must still certify it to collect. Since the debtor is the one who validated the document, he can also claim it has been paid. Therefore, if the creditor certifies it himself, they'll divide the debt amount. If not, he collects nothing. Rav Shimon Gamliel holds that if a debtor admits the shtar is authentic, Ein Tzarich L'Kaimo, so the debt here is divided without authentication. And point number three, the brisa continued, Nafal Yad Dayan. If the shtar fell into a judge's hand, the Tana Kama says, Lo Yotzio Olamis, the litigants can never retrieve it. Rav Yossi says, Haru B'cheskaso, it remains in its status as a valid shtar. Rav explains this means that someone found the shtar which was certified with a henpek by a judge. The Braisa teaches that not only where the shtar was not certified, where the loan may never have been issued, but even where it was certified and the loan was made, it is still not returned to the lender, the chayshinim l'pirion, because we are concerned about possible payment by the borrower. Rav Yossi says the shtar is returned to the lender and we're not concerned it was paid. The Gemara asks that this contradicts a different opinion of Rabbi Yossi's. A Braisa teaches that if a ksuba is found and the husband claims it's paid, it's not given to either party. Rabbi Yossi says that if she's still married and the time of payment has not arrived, the ksuba is returned to the wife. If she has been divorced or widowed, it's not given to either party because he is concerned about payment. Three answers are given, two of which reverse the opinions of the first Braisa. All right, so now we go to Siman Dav Zayin, and a standard Siman is a Kli Zayin, a weapon. We use a gun, and we often have an armed guard in the Siman, an armed guard. So here goes. Well, one armed guard at the basin had two people clutching onto different parts of a talus, wait in the front of the line to be seen, followed by a debtor and creditor clutching onto a shtar, where the debtor admitted he wrote the shtar, but claims he repaid it. The other armed guard found a shtar certified with a henpek and wasn't sure if he should return it to the lender because of a concern that it was already paid. Once again, slow motion. While one armed guard at the basin had two people clutching onto different parts of a talus, way in the front of the line to be seen, which reminds us, Rav Tachlifa of Eretz Yisrael taught a brisa, Shnaim Adukim Betalus. If two litigants are clutching a cloak, each claiming ownership, this one takes as far as his hand reaches, as does the other, and the rest of the cloak is divided evenly. Rabbi Avohu indicated that they must swear. So while one armed guard at the basin had two people clutching onto different parts of a talus, way in the front of the line to be seen, followed by a debtor and creditor clutching onto a shtar, where the debtor admitted he wrote the shtar, but claims he repaid it, which reminds us it was taught in a braisa, Shnaim Adukim B'shtar. If two people, a creditor and debtor, are clutching a document of debt, and the creditor says it's his, and he lost it and subsequently found it, and the debtor says that although the document is authentic, he already paid the debt and was given the shtar and later lost it, Rebbe says, Yiskaim HaShtar B'chosma, the document must be certified through its signatures as being authentic. Rav Shimon Gamliel says, Yochaloku, they should divide the debt equally. So, while one armed guard at the basin had two people clutching onto different parts of a talus, waiting in the front of the line to be seen, followed by a debtor and creditor clutching onto a shtar, where the debtor admitted he wrote the shtar but claims he repaid it, the other armed guard found the shtar certified with a henpek and wasn't sure if he should return it to the lender because of a concern that it was already paid, which reminds us. The Braisa continued, Nafal Yadayin, if the shtar fell into a judge's hand, the Tanna Kamma says, Uyotzi Olamis, the litigants can never retrieve it. Rav Yossi says, Haru Bechezkaso, it remains in its status as a valid shtar. Rav explains this means that someone found the shtar which was certified with a henpek by a judge. The Braisa teaches that not only where the shtar was not certified, where the loan may never have been issued, but even where it was certified and the loan was made, it is still not returned to the lender, the chayshinim l'pirion, because we're concerned about possible payment by the borrower. Rav Yossi says the shtar is returned to the lender and we're not concerned it was paid. So once again, while one armed guard of the basin had two people clutching onto different parts of a talus, way in the front of the line, to be seen, followed by a debtor and creditor clutching onto a shtar, where the debtor admitted he wrote the shtar but claims he repaid it. The other armed guard found a shtar certified with a henpek and wasn't sure if he should return it to the lender because of a concern that it was already paid. All right, so now it's time for four blah back chazara. Daf Gimel. So the Siman Daf Gimel is a gamal, a camel. So here goes. The camel. That must mean we're on Daf Gimel, gamal. The camel hired to take away three coins until Eliyahu comes, even though only the third coin was in dispute. Which reminds us, the Gemara asks that the Mishnah's ruling to divide the cloak does not accord with Rabbi Yossi's ruling, where two people deposited money with someone, one leaving one mana and the other leaving two mana. And they later dispute who left two mana. The Rabbans say the third mana is withheld until proof is brought, but Rabbi Yossi says, Im ken mahipsid rama. If so, what does the deceiver lose by deceiving? El hakol ye munach ad sheyavo Eliyahu. Rather, it should all be set aside until Eliyahu comes to induce him to confess. Here too, the cloak should be withheld. The Gemara answers that in the coin case, it's because the third coin definitely belongs to only one of them and cannot be divided. In our Mishnah, it's possible they picked up the cloak simultaneously and jointly own it. Since each party may truly believe he's the owner, Rabbi Yossi would agree to divide it. So the camel hired to take away three coins until Eliyahu comes, even though only the third coin was in dispute. Stopped to pick up two Edim who testified that a man owed 50 zuz of 100 zuz claim, making him take a shavua on the remainder, which reminds us, Rabbi Chiya taught that if one claims a mana, which is 100 zuz, from his fellow, which the defendant denies completely, and witnesses testify that he owes 50 zuz, he pays the 50 zuz and swears on the remainder, like one who confesses to part of a claim. For the admission of his own mouth should not be greater than the testimony of Edim based on a Kal V'Chomer. So the camel hired to take away three coins until Eliyahu comes, even though only the third coin was in dispute. Stopped to pick up two edim who testified that a man owed 50 zuz of 100 zuz claim, making him take a shvuah on the remainder. But it had no room for the man who was motive and mixes to his creditor, because he wasn't brazen enough to deny his total obligation. Which reminds us, Rabbah asks, why did the Torah say that one who admits to a part of a claim must swear about his denial? He should be exempt for having volunteered the partial admission. He answered, Chazakin Adam Meis Pana Bifnei Baal Chovo. It's because there's a presumption that a person is not so brazen as to deny his obligation to the face of his creditor. The Gemara explains that the reason we do not say, since he's willing to lie and steal part of the debt, he would also swear falsely, is because this person would really want to admit to the full debt. He didn't, because he's merely evading the creditor to stall until he has the money to pay. Therefore, the Torah required him to swear, so he admits completely. Daf Dalet. So the Siman Daf Dalet is a Delet, a door. So here goes. The two Edim coming to testify to part of a debt to obligate a Shvuah, who walked through a Beis Din door. Door. That must mean we're on Daf Dalet. Delet. Door. The two Edim coming to testify to part of a debt to obligate a Shvuah, who walked through a Beis Din door with a picture of Piv and Edechad painted on them, which reminds us Rabbi Chiya had derived from a Kal Vachomer that if Piv partial admission obligates a Shvuah, then certainly Edim who testified to part of a debt obligate a Shvuah. The Gemara ultimately derives it from a Tzad Shava, a common characteristic between Piv and a single witness. That as a result of a claim and denial, they come to Beis Din, and the defendant swears when the claim is supported, as Tosos adds, so the same applies to Edim. So the two Edim coming to testify to part of a debt to obligate a Shvuah, who walked through a Beis Din door with a picture of Piv and Edechad painted on them, overheard one man tell another, I owe you only 50 zuz v'heloch, and here it is yours. Which reminds us, Rabbi Chiya approved another ruling of his from our Mishnah. If someone claims a mana from his fellow who responds, I owe you only 50 zuz v'heloch, and here, it's yours, meaning they're unspent and still in the lender's legal possession, Rabbi Chiya says he must swear because it's still considered a mutar b'miksas. This is supported by our Mishnah where the litigants swear although the other party has possession of the half they're giving up. Rav Sheshe says one who admits with halach does not swear because the admitted 50 zuz are as if the lender is holding them in his hand and not part of the claim, and the remaining claim is fully denied. So the two Edim coming to testify as part of a debt to obligate a Shvuah, who walked through a Beis Din door with a picture of Piv and Edechad painted on them, overheard one man tell another, I owe you only 50 zuz v'halach, and here it is yours, standing behind a lender holding a shtar that just said slime without specifying an amount, which reminds us, V'chi was challenged from a brisa, slime denarim. If a shtar says the borrower owes slime or denarim without an amount specified, and the lender claims the debt is 5 slime or denarim, while the borrower claims it's 3, Rabbi Shimon Lazar says he must swear like an ordinary motive b'miksas, whereas Rabbi Kiva says he does not swear like one who returns lost property, since he voluntarily admitted to more than the two implied by the shtar. Daf Hay, so the simmer Daf Hay is a haystack. So here goes. The shepherd was seen hiding behind a haystack. Haystack? That must be one Daf Hay. The shepherd was seen hiding behind a haystack, eating two animals two owners had given him, without aiding present, which reminds us the Gemara records an incident of a shepherd, to whom people usually gave their animals in front of aiding, but one day gave them without aiding present. He later denied having received them, but Edim testified that they saw him eating two of the animals. Rabbi Zera said that if we rule like Rabbi Chiya's first law, that one swears when a claim is partially substantiated by witnesses, then the shepherd would have to swear regarding the remaining claim. Abai asked him, how can he swear? But he's a proven thief and disqualified from swearing. Rabbi Zera responded that he meant his opponent, the plaintiff, swears to collect payment, which is the rabbinically enacted law when the defendant is disqualified from swearing. So the shepherd was seen hiding behind a haystack eating two animals two owners had given him without aiding present. Surprisingly, he used bales of hay as a fence to prevent sheep he was given to watch from grazing in other people's fields, and told his friend who was baling hay that just because people may suspect he steals, they should not suspect he swears falsely, which reminds us Rabbi Yochanan taught that the shvuah of the Mishnah was enacted to discourage people from seizing other people's cloaks and claiming them. The Gemara asks, "V'neim amigu duchashid amamono chashinam ashvuasa." Let us say that since he's suspect in monetary matters, he's also suspect regarding swearing. Meaning, one who's prepared to steal would also swear falsely. The Gemara responds that we do not say "migu duchashid amamono chashid ashvuasa" because people are more hesitant to swear falsely than to steal. Dav vav. So the simon dav vav is a sword because a vav is straight like a sword. So here goes. The sword collector, sword. That must be more in dav vav, sword. The sword collector who grabbed someone's cloak because he had a suffix whether he had lent the person money to buy a sword, which reminds us, Abai disagrees with the Ryokan and holds that one who would steal outright would also swear falsely. Therefore, he explains differently why two people grasping a cloak must swear. We suspect that one has a suffix milva yashana, a questionable old loan against his fellow, which he's not entitled to collect, so a shavu is imposed to dissuade him. So the sword collector who grabbed someone's cloak because he had a suffix whether he had lent the person money to buy a sword was astonished when he ran into Basin and saw one man grab a tullus in dispute right in front of the Dayanim, and the other party initially said nothing, which reminds us, Rabbi Zera said, Takfa echa befenein hu mahu. If one grabbed the cloak from the other before us, meaning the Dayanim, what is the halacha? The Gemara clarifies that if his counterpart was silent and did not protest, he effectively admitted the cloak belongs to the one who grabbed it. If he did protest, then the grabbing is inconsequential and they still split it. Rather, the case is the Shasik Mikar Bahadut Sabach, where he was initially silent and later cried out in protest. Do we interpret his initial silence as an admission that the cloak is not his, or, since he ultimately protested, it indicates that his initial silence was because the judges saw the other litigant grab it, so he didn't feel the need to protest? So, the sword collector who grabbed someone's cloak because he had a suffix whether he had lent the person money to buy a sword was astonished when he ran into Basin and saw one man grab a tallis in dispute right in front of the Dayanim, and the other party initially said nothing, followed by a cone with a long shechita knife that looked like a sword, grabbing a suffix bechor was permitted to keep it, which reminds us, the Gemara brings a sugya of takfa kone, where a kone grabbed a suffix bechor and was permitted to keep it. All right, so now it's time to conclude our pop quiz of 10 questions. Number one, which daf do we have the Mishnah of Shnaim Ochasim Batalas? That's on daf Beis. Good. Number two, which daf do we discuss what the din is when a debtor and creditor are both clutching a shtar? That's on daf Zion. Good. Number three, which do we learn that the din that Edim who testified to part of a debt obligated shvu is learned from a tzad shava of piv ve'edachad? That's on daf Dalad. Good. Number four, which daf do you have the sugya of Takfa Kohen? That's on daf Vav. Good. Number five, which daf do we learn that we do not say that since one is suspected of stealing, he's suspected of swearing falsely? That's on daf Hey. Good. Number six, which daf do we learn that when two people are holding onto a tallis at different parts, they take as far as their hand reaches and the rest is split evenly? That's on daf Zion. Good. Number seven, which of them is the reason why a modem mixas swears? That's on daf Gimel. Good. Number eight, which daf do the question, what is done in a case where one grabbed the disputed tallis in front of the Dayanim and the other litigant initially was silent and then later protested? That's on daf Vav. Good. Number nine, which daf do we machos regarding someone who found a shtar which was certified, meaning with a hempek, by a judge, whether it should be returned to the lender or were concerned that it might have been paid? That's on daf Zion. Good. Number 10. Which have they learned why the Mishnah included both cases of two people claiming to find a lost talus and two people claiming to buying the same item? That's on daf Beis. Excellent. That concludes today's shir. This is Rabbi Avraham Goldhar from Zichur, wishing you a great day and great learning.